Welcome to Association Nation. From digital content to social strategy, print power to video value, engagement to conversion, we cover the content marketing topics that matter most for your members. This week, we'll tackle rapid response content in a slow environment. When information moves at the speed of tweets and the news cycle spins swiftly, are you ready to tap into timely conversations? Let's say you work in marketing and communications for an association. You're sipping your morning coffee and scrolling through your news feeds when a headline catches your eye. Maybe it's a trend piece, maybe it's an article about legislation. You think, that's perfect for our members. But what's your next thought? Or better yet, what's your next action? If your first impulse is to mobilize your team to create content right now, then congratulations. You've joined a growing number of membership organizations capitalizing on the value of rapid response content. But if you're not sure if you have the team or processes in place to do it, you're not alone. That's what we're here to talk about today on Association Nation, rapid response content in an environment that sometimes seems to move a little too slowly. If you're joining us, welcome. This is the first episode of our long, deep journey through the world of content marketing for associations, and we're glad to have you along for the ride. I'm your host, Jamie Andriopoulos, and I've lived and breathed this topic both by working at associations and working with them as VP of Strategy at Imagination. You won't just hear from me, though. We'll have expert insight from my fellow creatives and strategists at Imagination, and more importantly, from marketing leaders who understand membership needs, especially their own. Make no mistake, timely, relevant information is one of those needs. In a world where information moves at the speed of tweets, winning organizations are ready to tell stories in all their forms about what's going on now and what it means for their members. Who better than associations to be thought leaders about the issues of the day? That's certainly true for the National Federation of Independent Business, the Association for Small Business Owners. Their key issues, healthcare, taxes, regulation, are all over the news these days. And Kate Chandler, NFIB's digital content director, who works with Imagination on rapid response content, makes the most of covering those issues.
In terms of the timely rapid response style content, you know, we made a commitment about 2 years ago that we wanted to do that. We really weren't doing that kind of quick newsy content, and we thought that it was really important to start to do it to show our members and potential members that we really have a pulse on their issues, because we do. You know, we're paying attention to all of the stuff going on at the state level, at the federal level, and feedback we're getting from members.
Something that we hear a lot from other organizations is, you know, we want to be careful that we don't try to compete with the news media. You know, we're not a news outlet. So how does NFIB kind of contextualize that content and make sure that it's, you know, in line with the message that NFIB is trying to get across, but it also kind of frames it for the small business owner?
It really is to put the NFIB perspective or point of view, you know, onto this news that they're hearing. Something big happens at either the state or federal level, news, 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 they know it happened. But then a lot of our members think, well, so what exactly is that going to mean? Like, is that going to cost me money? Am I going to have to redo something in my business plan? You know, do I need to reschedule my employees? I mean, they need to understand the practical implications of what that news is that they're hearing. And so for us, that's what we try to bring to each piece of content.
How does the process in creating that rapid response content differ from creating a traditional article?
It's completely different than creating, you know, any kind of print piece for sure. But even it's different from creating the sort of longer tail evergreen content pieces for the website, because we go from idea to publish basically within 24 hours. So we have our three key issues for the year, you know, healthcare, taxes, regulations. But then there are other things, obviously, that come up that are of concern to small business owners. We're looking at the media clips every morning, our internal media clips, you know, making use of those to find news. Of course, keeping tabs on the big news outlets, and then any kind of tips we get from our in-house staff who are really knowledgeable about things coming up. So there's a lot of different ways that we ideate, and then from idea to having it written to over to NFIB for review, and then sometimes it's a quicker one-person review. Sometimes if it's a more sensitive topic, we have several people look at it, but nevertheless, we try to have that whole process turned around, again, from idea to publish within 24 hours.
That's impressive. And do you typically need to get leadership sign-off or feedback on those pieces that go out?
So if it's on one of our three key issues for the year, I usually have somebody else have a look, somebody on the leadership team, just to make sure we're on message, everybody knows about it, that we're comfortable with it. The key is setting that expectation, I think, with the whoever is going to be reviewing it, that, hey, we need to have a quick review here so that we are, again, still kind of relevant and responsive with this piece of content.
Sure. And speaking of publish, where is NFIB typically publishing this content? Is it on a hub, on your website, or is it going out via an e-newsletter and social channels, or kind of all of the above?
Yep, all of the above. So we do have a news hub on our website where our content, newsy content, lives. However, it doesn't just live in that hub. It goes out all over the websites, and then we post each piece out on social media channels. And then we've also had a lot of success using our rapid response content with some paid efforts through content distribution networks like Outbrain and Taboola. So, you pay for clicks back to your website and people want to read that content. And our successes there have been mainly focused around, getting people to convert in terms of giving us their email address. And then we take them in as a lead and start to nurture that lead and turn folks into NFIB members.
You've been kind of in the market for rapid response content for a couple of years now, and it seems like the program is, getting tweaked and evolved a little bit over time. Are you kind of moving in a direction where there may be a need for more rapid response visual content or more rapid response local content, for example?
Yeah, I think visual content is super important. There's tons of stats out there about the impact of visuals. If you have visuals, of course, on your social media channels, those posts are engaged with at a much higher rate. So, visuals are a little more challenging because then you're engaging, a design and art department. But I think that is going to become increasingly important, to kind of make your content stand out, even for this quick turnaround style content.
Taking a step back, where do you look for inspiration? Who's doing this kind of content really well?
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest. Basically, I just play on a computer all day. So I do look at news outlets and websites and social media channels, and there's a lot of inspiration out there. And I think you can, take a lot from just sort of clicking around to, again, media outlets, other organizations, things like that. Get some ideas. What's good? What's bad? What do you think, folks? What do you think you could do better, or what could you learn from those? So there's a lot out there, but one organization in particular, the Society for Human Resource Management, I think does a great job with timely content that really, it capitalizes on things in the news. The headlines are interesting, they're timely, and then within the copy, they do a great job of injecting that SHRAM, the Society for Human Resource Management, point of view.
Call it serendipity that Kate Chandler named the Society for Human Resource Management as a model for timely coverage and context, because we also talked to Jess Perry, Senior Vice President of Publishing and Media at SHRM. Perry was brought on board in 2014 in large part because of her digital background and expertise.
Organizationally, I think have made a much larger commitment to our digital operations with a website redesign, an enhanced mobile app for our conferences, much more focus on social media. We redesigned and relaunched our members-only social community called SHRM Connect. So it's been quite transformative.
What is your POV on timely content? Do you tend to address the news and trends, or do you respond in a different way?
You know, because SHRM's issues are so core to the workplace and the workforce, we kind of naturally intersect with, very public policy, if you will. So essentially, if you work, we're covering the issues that are of interest to you, albeit from, the angle and perspective of an HR professional. So in some ways, we don't really have much choice but to cover timely topics. We work very collaboratively with our government affairs team, who's up on the Hill regularly and has their finger on the pulse of what's going on. But we're not in the business of breaking news, per se. We're not staffed to compete with the New York Times or the Post or, the Wall Street Journal. And we don't really have a scoops-based mission, the way that they would. So strategically, we handle, breaking news events like that as aggregations. And we call them in focus, and we summarize and link to a variety of coverage, and then follow up either the same day or the next day or just a separate story with the HR-specific angle.
Since you do provide those follow-ups, you seem to be in the business of providing context. How do you get that across on your social channels?
Our reporters are, constantly on Twitter and have pretty large followings on Twitter. So they're going to provide that kind of quick hit using that channel. Obviously, we're using Facebook. We mine our own social media channels, too, for HR's take on these things. Our members are reading the same things that we're reading many times, and, we count on their input and their point of view, and they're often making use of their own Twitter feeds.
As you're listening on social channels and you're looking at the needs of your members, how do you decide which topics to cover?
It really happens on a case-by-case basis. We're looking at what we've covered previously on the topic, how important this new development might be to our members, and what can we say about it that is, either unique or specific to HR. We're looking at lots of different inputs for guidance as to what we're going to cover and what we know that our users are going to be interested in. We're looking at Google Analytics, at, Hootsuite, at TrackMaven, at, our regular conversations with our members. We have a knowledge center that receives real-time calls from our members who are looking to seek advice in particular areas. So there's not really any one specific source or even formula that we use. It's a lot about feel and about just the subject matter expertise and knowledge of our members.
Even if there's not a specific source or formula, is there a specific home for this content? Tell me a little bit about your content ecosystem.
Yeah, so we, our website is very well trafficked, the very first place it'll get posted, obviously, is to the website. Depending on the story, we'll follow it up very carefully with, social media amplification. And we have both a daily and weekly newsletters that cover broad HR trends across various topics. Right now, I would say that an increasing amount of our traffic is driven by the newsletters. We launched the HR Daily newsletter last year. It was our first foray into daily newsletters, and it was a tremendous success, both with our readers as well as our advertisers. So I think SHRM is not unusual in that we've, discovered a real hunger for, among our members for newsletters and as a way to consume, consume content.
From a content perspective, how do you tie your timely content with the more evergreen stuff that you're creating, for example, a magazine or a journal? I mean, obviously there's going to be tie-ins there, but how do you determine, what goes where?
Our content strategy generally is what I like to call macro, micro, and micro. The macro is the workplace trends and the thought leadership and the research reports, and the micro would be compliance issues, tips for HR professionals, best practices, things that are going to help them do their jobs. And then micro is things that are going to help them advance their own career. So when we think about timely content, oftentimes that's going into what I would call the macro category. You know, it's the things that are, you know, impacting the workplace at large. Occasionally, though, there is, you know, breaking news on compliance issues. That's not necessarily going to be something of broad interest to, you know, everyone in the workplace, but it's of extreme interest to our members, you know, especially when it's state and local compliance issues. So, you know, we try to have this kind of overarching strategy for the content and house it in the website, too, in a way that kind of speaks to that overall strategy.
Great. And as you've approached timely content, what do you think that SHRM's biggest successes have been?
I think from a success story standpoint, we learned in the last, you know, year to 18 months that, you know, we probably can't post to social enough. you know, I think there was initially some reservations about overposting to social media, but, you know, we're posting most of what we publish at this point, and really trying to get it out there with some frequency. And we, you know, we may repost an article that we had posted before, you know, on Facebook or LinkedIn. So I would say that, you know, in terms of discoveries, that would probably be one thing. We're driving a lot more traffic from social right now just from being more aggressive about our social outreach and activities.
An aggressive approach to social is familiar to our next guest, Dennis Wharton, Executive Vice President of Communications for the National Association of Broadcasters. In his 20-plus years at NAB, he's seen and led an evolution from faxing press releases in response to issues to full-time monitoring of social channels, not to mention some unique approaches to getting NAB's message across.
In terms of messaging, social media has just changed the landscape enormously. The internet is has presented so many different opportunities and platforms for getting a message out that it's always challenging, but it's always exciting, and it's something you have to embrace in this new world.
Yeah, and who is kind of the key stakeholder in determining what the strategy is for that really timely coverage?
I'm the head of communications, so I obviously talk to various department heads at NAB. We have different messaging points or targets. You know, we have a legal department that deals with the Federal Communications Commission. We have Capitol Hill, the government and members of Congress and congressional staff and the White House and various federal agencies.
Knowing that NAB is doing a lot of work on the Hill and, you know, is really kind of the voice for the broadcasting community, do you ever find situations where you have to respond quickly to potentially some kind of negative sentiment around the industry or, you know, someone on social media who has kind of a negative comment on, you know, something going on that you're putting out communications-wise?
Only about five times a day.
Yeah, yeah.
This is not for the faint of heart in terms of rapid response media. You better be on Twitter, and you better be on Facebook, and you better be watching what's going on social media on a real-time basis. That's why I have the TweetDeck application at my desk, so that I'm following the conversation on Twitter. And if there's somebody saying negative or false things about broadcasting, I need to be responding immediately with something like that, just so that it doesn't explode. It's a 24/7 rapid response, proactive PR, you know, climate that you're in constantly. I have a great staff that is on all these platforms as well, and a great team of NAB staff, which is top of their game professionals who are there for guidance and assistance, and a research team that provides the story behind the story in terms of when you're a PR person, you need research and numbers and data to back up your claims and make sure that they're credible. Otherwise, you know, if you're not credible, you get laughed out of the room by reporters.
Absolutely. And I think some listeners will probably be somewhat surprised to hear that the EVP of communications is checking the social media channels as much as, you know, everyone else on the communications and social team.
You got, I mean, look, if I have a board member who's calling and he's on Twitter and sees the New York Times reporter has tweeted something that's negative and wrong about broadcasting, you better believe the EVP of Communications should know that and has pushed back and sent credible data to the New York Times reporter to refute that. And I'm not singling out the New York Times. That's just an example. But, yeah, I've got to be, on the front lines of defense for broadcasters, and I take pride in doing a good job doing that.
How do you and your team really keep your finger on the pulse of topics that are being covered in the media that you need to respond to?
We use tools like Vocus, which sort of tracks everything that's written about broadcasters in smallest papers in the country to NBC Nightly News. And so that provides a running sort of tally of stories that we might have missed through that were in the broadcast trades, for example. We're obviously reading the broadcast trades religiously, both radio and TV. We're reading the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, USA Today, all the major dailies constantly, Politico, Morning Consult, and then the broadcast trades like Broadcasting and Cable Magazine, TV News Check, Radio, Inside Radio, Radio Inc., Radio Business Report. These are all publications that when I get up in the morning from about 6:30 to 8:30, I'm scouring these websites for news and nuggets that are important to my members. It's a constant challenge to keep up with all of those, and then we use blogging and letters to the editor and webcasts and podcasts to keep our members informed, respond proactively to challenges, and stay on top of this constantly evolving need to stay relevant and timely with both our membership and with reporters who are covering our issues.
My final question for you is that, as an organization who really seems to be doing quick response content really, really well, what would your one bit of advice be for an organization that hasn't really dipped their toe in the waters yet?
Well, you really need to sit down and map out a strategy. First off, your PR people have to know the reporters who are covering your business. You have to have a social media team in place to be engaged fully on Twitter and Facebook, getting your message out. If you have the resources, you need to have the capabilities to do blogging, webcasting to members. In a perfect world, you'll have someone writing op-eds in publications, trade publications, and also consumer press when that's warranted, video news releases, and using live content. A lot of it depends on the resources that an organization has. I'm blessed to work for an organization like NAB, which has phenomenal resources. Sometimes that's not easy to come by, but build from the bottom up and employ your grassroots members to help build the organization, and you can build an effective communications strategy.
That's good advice from someone who's been in the business of building a communication strategy for decades. But if you're still daunted, take heart in one last word from Jess Perry from SHRM.
At the end of the day, there's two aspects of timeliness. One is serving your members, right? You're covering something because it's information that they need to know. And the other is because it's a touch point with your members, and you want to have prudent but regular touch points with your members. So I would say think broadly about how you view timeliness, and experiment. Put your toe in the water, and I'd say be afraid to fail, because it really doesn't cost much. It doesn't have to.
I work with our next guest, Chris Blows, every day, and I know he has plenty to say about rapid response content. Chris is VP Content at Imagination, and he spends his time digging into what works and what doesn't when it comes to digital content. Chris, who gets it right? Are there examples out there that you think people should check out for best practices?
For me, the people who do rapid response best are the ones who realize it's all about context. I love that some of the guests today have talked about not trying to compete with the major players in breaking news. You're not going to beat the New York Times to a scoop. However, you can provide context on that scoop from a unique perspective of your organization. Now, one group that I've been following recently is the Outdoor Industry Association. A coworker had forwarded me a video campaign that really impressed me, and I've been paying attention to them ever since. Granted, I'm a huge skier and an amateur mountaineer, so the subject matter naturally appeals to me, but even more than that, from a marketing perspective, I'm really interested in their approach to policy issues. Case in point, when a House bill came up recently proposing the sale of public lands, the industry and related advocates rallied against it, and they managed to beat it. Now, within a day of the announcement that that bill had been withdrawn, OIA shared content about it. And they didn't just claim the glory for themselves, they actually shared that glory with a woman who had led the charge and kind of led the alliance against that bill. And they did so in the form of a personality-filled and really insightful Q&A. That's just one example, too. The group is really on top of issues surrounding public lands, climate change, and anything else that is top of mind for outdoor retailers and the people that they serve.
What about surprises? Are there any dark horses out there, any unexpected champions of rapid response content?
In terms of surprises, with the caveat that they are a nonprofit rather than a membership group, it's worth taking a look at the work of the Southern Poverty Law Center. They're a group that's in the spotlight a decent amount recently because of the nature of their work, but I think of them as a dark horse a little bit only because the ACLU has really been in the spotlight, both in terms of their work and in terms of the huge amount of fundraising that they've done in recent months. The Southern Poverty Law Center covers similar ground, but they're smaller and they have a narrower focus. However, they really work that focus for maximum effect. This is a group that tracks hate groups and incidents of discrimination, and they regularly produce content around those areas, from deep reports to simple briefs to daily updates on what's going on in the world that legal advocates can use in their fight against discrimination. Not everyone's going to agree with their politics, but if you look at how they're getting their message out in the world, it's been pretty effective, and a lot of it hinges on their own original content.
I know we're always looking beyond the association world for inspiration, too. So who's doing this well in the broader world?
I think if you look at another nonprofit, the Poynter Institute is providing a really solid model as well. They're completely dialed into the topics that keep journalists awake at night, and they're covering them with both expert insight and with really credible research data, which is really important to that audience. So, I mean, if you're a journalist and you want perspective on the state of local news or on the best practices for fact-checking in an era where that's something that's really up in the air, or even the state of political coverage, you're going to find something about it from the Poynter Institute, and you're going to find it probably on a daily or weekly basis. From a brand perspective, CMO.com by Adobe is also pretty stellar. Timeliness and rapid response on CMO take on a little bit of a different meaning. It's more about responding to trends than it is about responding to news, but their trend coverage comes with a hefty dose of practical, what does this mean for marketers perspective.
Those are some great examples, and there's plenty associations can learn from them. If you're looking to take the leap into rapid response content, a few guiding principles will help land you on your feet. Start by defining what rapid response and timeliness means to your organization. If you have an advocacy mission, providing perspective and context on policy news may be one of your key needs. But timeliness may also mean keeping members up to date on upcoming events, major deadlines, or changes in your industry, and other topics members need to know about sooner rather than later. That's why you need to define the topics that matter most to your members and track them closely. Everything from social listening tools to news aggregation services to simple Google alerts can help you do that, but never discount the value of direct feedback from your stakeholders. Next, build your team. You may already have the right people in place, eager and willing to dive into daily content, or you may need to hire or find a partner. In either case, consider your needs. Reporters, multimedia creators, editors, analytics experts, art directors, all or some may have a part to play. The shape of your team also depends on what channels make the most sense for you. Are you doing daily digital stories? Make sure you have reporters with experience producing fast, accurate work on tight deadlines. Is your main goal promoting social conversation? Then plan for strong visuals and multimedia content. Visuals matter in the social world, and a social post can pick up as much as 3 times the engagement if it comes with an image or a video. Most of all, pick a team you can trust and arm them with the information they need to represent you online with minimal hoops to jump through. Smart planning includes having subject matter experts on call to comment. Smart planning means mapping out a review process that makes sure the right people weigh in, but you're not editing by committee. But above all else, smart planning means having a well-prepared team that can work fast because they already know your association's perspective and they already know your sensitivities. It may seem like a lot of ground to cover, but it's worth it to be a part of the conversation, and that's the goal, really. I often come back to the trusty I like, I wish brainstorming exercise that we use. I like when associations realize they don't have to break the news to be a part of it. I like when they add context and perspective that only they can provide to the issues of the day. I wish more people recognized how much packaging and visuals matter, even in the realm of fast-paced storytelling. And I wish more marketers realized that they have the capability to do all of the above. That's all for today. Thanks for starting our journey with us. Let us know what you think at podcast@imaginepub.com, and be sure to subscribe using your favorite podcast app to get future episodes. Up next month, we'll cover another topic on the minds of those who deal in thought leadership: building a home for your digital content and distribution on a content hub.